The views, comments, and opinions of the following program do not necessarily reflect those of Morris Media Studios, MorrisMediaLive.com, or its affiliates. Listener discretion is advised.
Let me introduce you.
Good enough.
Well, I guess we'll get started with the introduction. That was a little behind-the-scenes peek there for you at the Ride Along Radio Show, the show where we give you our perspective as law enforcement officers on the topics of the day and the issues and stuff that people point out to us on social media and stuff we see in the news, etc. My name is George Holt. I am the host of the Ride Along Radio Show. Typically, I have Gil Contreras here with me. My partner in crime, Gil, is out tonight, but I brought back up. And to my right, I have my man JB, who's a current contributor here on the Ride Along Radio Show.
Thank you.
And
thank
he's going to be throwing his voice in. And of course, to my left, I have fan favorite cop turned comedian Roger Rod, who is back to join us tonight and offer his perspective as a police officer and a commentator on all things of a social nature. And you know, I mean, I watch some of the stuff you put on Facebook. And your take on stuff, man, is very enlightening, and it gets the people going.
Enlightening is very kind.
It gets the people going. So one of the things that we start off doing is every week we go over our social media comments from the last show or what's transpired between the last show and now. So last week we talked about a whole bunch of stuff from the Houston Unified School police officer who was convicted of, I don't know if it was aggravated sexual assault or unlawful sexual intercourse or something. And a meme got generated out of that. And hopefully POTUS can pull that up later in the show, the kindergarten cop one, that that Ride Along Radio show legend Chuck Farmer put together. And we're all over the place. We covered a gamut of things. We got a whole bunch of stuff to cover tonight, too. But so Chris Wimbush, who is a frequent viewer, says, I really love this show because we have two opposite opinions of law enforcement issues. I enjoy Gil letting everyone know what people like him really think about the world he lives in. And I'm emphasizing the words that are in caps. I would rather know that up front about someone than for them to be one way in my presence and another way when I'm not around. Thank you, Gil. So I wish Gil was here to hear the accolades, but I'm sure he'll watch this later. So you got some good, straightforward praise there on social media, Gil. And Willie Sweet Wonka Joe, who is a Ride Along Radio Show contributor, calls in quite a bit. He always leaves comments even when he can't call in because he's some kind of truck driver. He's probably moving weight or something, but we won't put him on blast.
too late.
Yeah, I know, too late. And he says, Gil, at the end of every show, I say, hey, leave your comments down here in the YouTube section, and we'll get to it. Well, I guess I wasn't getting to his often enough because he says, George, can you just tell Cavett Haynes to leave his comments on YouTube since those are the only ones you respond to? So I didn't mention Cavett Haynes this week except in your comment, and I did get to your comment. And so you can put Chris Wimbush on that list too, Willie Sweet Wonka Joe, because Cavett Haynes doesn't call up like you call up, so you already get enough airtime. Anyway, thank you guys both for your support. And again, if you have any comments you want to leave it down here in the YouTube comment section, or you can hit us on our Facebook page. So anyway, gentlemen, the state of law enforcement today. You know, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. Oh, you do? Okay, great. So listen, here's the meme that Chuck Farmer put up after Gil said he would not want to be a school cop. He didn't want to deal with kids. Kids are annoying, and he doesn't trust anybody that wants to work with kids. The Chuck Farmer came and put that that meme up of Gil Contreras, kindergarten cop. And you see the little Morris Media logo there in the O for cop there. So, and Chuck Farmer does great work, and that was that's a good one. That's a good one, and shout out to Chuck Farmer and Gil, kindergarten cop. So, state of law enforcement today. I have a son who's in law enforcement now, and I was talking to one of my friends. He says if he had to do it over again, he wouldn't do it. And I don't say that I wouldn't become a cop in today's environment. I think I would do it differently than I did before. I probably would not choose to work in the high crime, high operational tempo area that I worked in before. But I law enforcement's always been a calling for me, so I can't say that I wouldn't do it, but I think I would do it a little differently.
Yeah, you know? I don't think any of us knew what we were really getting ourselves into when we did. There was always talk of,
we thought we did.
A really great career, benefits, you know, you get to have fun, you know.
Yeah, I didn't care nothing about the benefits. I was 23 years old. I didn't care nothing about that.
Well, but I'm saying that's what was.
No, they put that on the paper, but I, right. Okay.
Right.
I didn't even care about the money, to be honest with you. I know that sounds odd for those of you who know me now, but back then, what I would say is
I would do it over again. I like what I do. I've had a lot of fun. You and I have had a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's right.
Our two departments converging and seeing each other out and about, and then our off-duty exploits that have helped you know, make life better for our families that we couldn't have been able to do if we weren't cops. So
absolutely. I wouldn't be where I am today if I had not had this career as a foundation, no doubt.
Right. So I would do it over again. There's certainly a lot of things I would do differently.
That's what I'm saying. Do it differently.
Yeah, I probably would have went straight to college out of high school with the vigor that I did later on in life.
Right. Get it out of the way earlier.
Get it out of the way. But then again, too, I did better in school because of my experiences on the job.
Me too. I made it. When I went back to school as a cop, straight A's, honor roll, full-time, right. Part-time, all that. And I didn't have that kind of focus, discipline. Didn't have the background to do that earlier in life. You know what I mean?
And the people that I dealt with, I have to thank them, meaning our clients, our customers, the miscreants and criminals, because
I never thought of them as clients and customers, but I guess they are.
Well, I mean, you know how you have to look at it today. We serve people. People are the police. I mean, Sir Robert Peel talked about that in 1800s.
Right.
So
protect and serve.
All I would say is, though, is those folks seeing me having, job protection because of the type of people.
Oh, yeah, job security, school, sure.
I realized that, you know, if there's anything I could do here in school to keep from being like any of these people I deal with,
right.
I'm going to give school 110%, and I did the same thing. So and it actually made my work product better in school because I had a lot to talk about.
Oh, yeah. No, undoubtedly. There's no way. Like I said, I mean, I ended up, like, you know, honor student because of that, you know, no doubt. Now, Roger, you did a little different. You went to school first. And got that out of the way, and then you came into law enforcement.
Came into law enforcement. Yeah, it was a whole concatenation of circumstances that got me there.
That was a $13 word.
At least $13.
Yeah. Well, Stanford ought to give me something other than the student loans.
Yeah, I was used to maybe a $9 or $11 word, but that one there, it does start with a C, right?
Yeah, I have to look that one up.
That is, I think, the last spelling that I saw of it.
Okay, yeah, all right. Just check. I didn't know it was a C or a K. You know, at $13.
Sometimes it's difficult, you know, when I get around folks like yourselves, I always bow in deference to those of you that put in the long years. I really was 3 years in and out. It did not last a long time for me. I realized early on I had to pull my own number because it wasn't working for me.
Sure.
I respect the job. Sure. I respect the profession. I'll always understand. I will always treasure the experience and the values it gave me, the knowledge it gave me. But at the same time, to say that, oh, yeah, I was in the trenches with you guys all those years. No. You had long, long careers, and I had a very short 3-year run, and that just was still qualifying.
It probably didn't seem short at the time, though, did it?
No, it didn't. And I was still what I call – the way we looked at it in my department, until you had 5 years in, you were an FNG, and I'm sure you know what that is.
Right. Yeah, sure.
And that's the way – and I agree that that's what I was an FNG after 3 years.
Well, to translate for those of you, and I'll keep it – I don't have to keep it clean, but I'll try – effing new guy is FNG. Effing new guy. Okay. I'm sure we'll get to the actual word later, but.
Right. Well, especially if I'm on this show.
Well, you know, I was going to say 3 years. I can remember on day zero at the academy, somebody wasn't there for 3 hours.
Oh, yeah.
There were people who didn't last 3 days, 3 weeks, three months.
Oh, man.
So the thing is to get through all of those things that allow you to be called a police officer and to experience 3 years worth of being on the job. And then knowing when to walk away from it is very commendable because
There's cats who stay too long, and it's clearly not for them.
Exactly.
And they're out there being liabilities.
Right. And I appreciate that. And the reality of it is that we all know very early on who doesn't belong there. And
right.
It wasn't that I wasn't capable of doing the job. I was not emotionally handling it to the degree that I should have. All the warning signs they told you about in the academy, if you see blank, 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 and blank happening to you, it's time for you to think about getting out. I was 8 for 8.
Right.
Oh, wow.
And I knew it was time to go. And it was, you know, but as we both know, as the three of us know, that I don't ever put myself on the level of you guys that did 20, 25, and 30. At least one thing you do know is that you've either done the job or you haven't. It's very esoteric as a profession.
Right.
And what I try to get this across, because I'm on this show a lot, I play a lot on the black comedy circuit, and a lot of black folks are very shocked to hear that the guy that they see as this wild, crazy, ranting hippie on the stage was once a police officer.
You know what? And I know comics who know you who didn't know you were a cop until I told them.
I know that. And it's not something I wanted to walk into Compton and say, hey, guys, I'm an ex-cop. How are you? That's my time. Good night. I didn't want to go that
right.
But yeah, I mean, I try to explain to those who have approached me on particularly the hot topic subjects. And so when I hear somebody who was never a police officer trying to tell me how the job should be done, it's as ignorant as the person who was never a comedian that always comes up to us and has a joke we can use in our act.
Right.
The
guy who has never stood up in a fucking restaurant and said, hey, somebody left their lights on because they're afraid to talk in front of a crowd. But they got a whole lot of jokes and ways you should do your act. It's that ignorant to try to tell a police officer how to do their job. You've either done it or you haven't.
And every job has got ins and outs and ins. And like you said, it's esoteric and all that stuff. Either you understand it at a level of minutia or you don't understand it at all. But see, here's the thing. They got TV shows and movies, and people see cops every day. So people really think, oh, this is how that should be done, you know. Or how come you didn't do it like this, like Eddie Murphy did it in Beverly Hills Cop or whatever?
Yeah, it was one of the things that was so simple that a retired police chief that I'm very good friends with, I've known for a long, long time. But he was a really, really top-notch level police officer. And I was discussing this concept is where is it that has become so fashionable to fight and run and flee from the police?
Yeah.
And he pointed out something that I never thought of. What do you see in every TV show and movie?
Right.
Somebody, the police says, stop, they run. They run, they get in a car, they whatever they do, they flee.
The glamorization of it.
This is what people think you're supposed to do.
Wow, I never even thought about that.
I didn't either, but that's so simple. People have always emulated what they see on that screen, and so why is it so many people are fighting and running? Well, shit, you want to be on TV? Try it out.
Well, you know what? That's the other thing. When Pursuit started being broadcast live on TV, there was an uptick in pursuits.
We
saw that definitely, no doubt.
Yeah. Right.
No doubt.
Well, you know, I don't want to – I'm not going to even posit that it's the devil's advocate here, but what I will say is as I've gotten older, I have – come to accept that some of the things we do in law enforcement, when people see them, and some people are good at articulating what we're doing or how it looks, it does make me think about my delivery on dealing with folks. Even if they've not been police officers before, but they say, you know, why you got to come at us like that? Why you got to do this? Why you got to do that? And then you kind of got to pause for a second and ask yourself, you know, how happy would you be if someone was talking to your son like that?
Sure. And if it's an honest question and there's time, I'll engage that.
Right.
I always do. I always try to explain to people, because people sometimes just want to know.
Right.
Sometimes they're being confrontational assholes, but sometimes they really want to know.
Right.
And if the time and situation is right, then, hey, we can get into it, man, and I'll talk to you. I never have a problem with that.
Now, the conversation I will always take up with someone is, why didn't you shoot him in the hand?
Oh, my God.
Or why didn't you shoot the gun out of your hand or shoot him in the leg?
Yeah.
I'll take on that every single time, either by physicality, mechanics, or talking about, you know, weaponry or, you know, ballistics and things like that to explain to people. You know, if somebody, oh, you should have shot the gun out of his hand. Well, you know, a gun is a really small...
Movies.
Well, yeah, but the
and
thing
it's metal,
is,
and it's ricochets,
well,
and everything
the thing
else.
And those are conversations I love to get into with people, because you have to get them to think, because they haven't been a cop, and because maybe they haven't even fired a weapon.
But see, but like Roger said, in the movies, cops are able to shoot guns out of people's hands. Right.
Yeah. I wish Hollywood. I wish you would stop doing that.
Yeah. Well, that's been part of my mission as a technical advisor on film and television productions.
Right.
It's been my mission to straighten that bullshit out.
Right,
believe me. You know. But hey, they tell me, hey man, this isn't a training film. This is entertainment, and that's more entertaining than it not happening. So
right
there you go. Yeah.
When I hear things at the level of ignorance when somebody pulls a knife on a police officer, you should have tased him. How about you? Fuck you, asshole. You go out there and you take on somebody with a knife.
Right.
And you try. The object isn't to have a fair fight when you're a police officer. The object is to win.
Right.
And when is the public going to get it through their head that if this lunatic is attacking a badged, gun-carrying, licensed police officer, what the fuck are they going to do to you?
Or exactly.
Or just
they don't care about him. They don't care about you.
Just attacking a member of the public.
That's what he's saying. He'll easily do that.
From the police officer.
I'm saying if you're crazy enough to go after the police officer,
right.
What regard do you have for a member of the public?
Well, but I mean, I like to point out the person before the police because oftentimes we're there because they've called us because someone's doing something to another
person. And you know, we have a story tonight where that exact thing happened where guy called, though he was going to handle something himself. He calls the police instead of handling it himself, and at the end he talks about how glad he is that he let the police handle it
right.
instead of him handling it himself. But that's later in the show. You know, man, people just don't really – they don't get it, but the problem is sometimes people don't want to get it. And I do a lot of interaction on Facebook with a lot of people. I have wide and varied Facebook friends, hundreds of them from different walks of life, all walks of life, honestly. And when people – they try to go back and forth with a law enforcement officer about a law enforcement topic. It's like, you know what, would you argue with a doctor about some medical shit?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Would you argue with an attorney about a point of law?
Well,
I have friends that are in music, right? Musicians and producers. I don't argue with them about beats and shit. That's
right.
Not, I don't know. I know.
No, and,
you know what
you
mean?
I totally agree with you. It's just that when we talk about where law enforcement is going, I think that it's important. Over the years, we've improved in this. We have to have more dialogue also.
Certainly. And that's part of what we're doing this for here.
Oh, well, no,
if you want to call in, 323-293-3375.
And I don't mean just the show. I mean in general.
No, in general. I know what you mean. As an industry.
Yes, yeah. As a profession.
Sure.
We really need to do more of that. And what's somewhat disturbing is with all the levels of or the platforms we have, you know, we don't take advantage of them enough to interact with the public to talk about those things. I got to give Jim McDonald, Sheriff McDonald, credit for today having a meeting with the ACLU and some other folks.
Oh, he sat down with them?
Yeah, about the issue over a sanctuary state.
I think
it's SB 54. I mean, that's kind of unheard of for law enforcement executives to sit down with the folks who oppose a particular thing.
To engage him. But, I mean, I think he's savvy enough to understand that as a sheriff, he's an elected official. So, you know, he's got to kind of – he should be doing that.
Yeah, versus
now, this is a law enforcement.
Appointed.
Right. A chief of police is a hired employee.
Right.
The sheriff is elected. So not only is he a top law enforcement official, he's also an elected representative of the people, right, or elected official. So he needs to engage him on a couple of different levels,
right.
And I'm glad he's doing that.
Yeah, and I think that's really important because it kind of can set the tone for the rest of the law enforcement professionals, whether they be appointed or elected, at least in the state.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
On that issue.
Absolutely. So we get into the news of the day after we go through our preamble here today, and you'll appreciate this as an avid gym goer. There is a gym in Atlanta, Georgia, that has a policy on not allowing police officers or active duty military people in the gym or to work out in the gym. And the guy explains why, and I'll save my opinion for after the video clip has been aired, and then we can come back and talk
about
it.
This I got to see. I didn't hear this.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing.
It centers on a local gym with an explicit policy. Take a look at the sign here. It centers on the fact that no police officers are allowed and no active members of the military as well. Jen, the gym's owner, not backing down here despite the backlash.
No, he's not getting much support on social media either, Sheba. The comments on our Facebook page overwhelmingly critical of this very controversial policy at the EAV Barbell Club. That's in the East Atlanta Village. Ramona Barfield wrote this: no cops and no military. Best of luck to this gym. Hope you never need the help of either, because I would laugh as I walked away. On the other side, Wayne Meyer wrote, not everybody is comfortable working out, eating, drinking, or fraternizing with cops. This gym grabbed our attention when an 11 Live viewer sent us a photo of this sign in front. We've blurred out the cuss word in the middle of the phrase, no cops. The sign has since been taken down, but the owner, Jim Chambers, told us he plans to replace it with something similar, minus the foul language. He sees his ban on police and military members as a political statement.
We wanted one space that was just a little different. It's not a, you know, aggressive hetero jock space that's dominated by cops and soldiers. It's a place where you're safe from that. And we don't want to make police stronger so that they can hurt people more efficiently. It's not a personal thing. It's you put a uniform on, and quite honestly, I view that as an occupying enemy army when you put that uniform on.
We talked to some lawyers to see if this kind of policy is legal, and they told us because police officers and military members are not considered to be part of a protected class, that this would likely not be a case of discrimination under the law, Sheba.
Have you been able to hear anything from Atlanta police about this sign and this policy by the gym yet?
Yes, we did get a statement from the Atlanta Police Department. I have it in my notes here. They said, were we to respond to an emergency there, this sign would not stop us from lawfully doing our job.
All right, Jen Leslie, thank you.
Okay. Roger, I'll let you start off because I know that you have some opinions about this as an avid fitness guy.
Well, first of all, you saw what the guy looked like. First of all, he way too many episodes of the Three Stooges when he got that Mo Howard haircut and the ink on his face. He's a rubberized face, yeah. Asshole to begin with. So we can begin with his whole concept of life is that he feels as though I'm not comfortable around cops, which begs the question, why, bitch? You're not.
Yeah, it begs the question, clearly.
Why, bitch? Why? Right. What are you doing? Is there a little 8-year-old little boy that's locked up in your closet you don't want us
right.
to know about?
And what's the problem?
In between sets, one police officer might see the kid screaming in the back corner. I have no idea what it would be. And then the military, okay, I can sort of, I can find a fine line somewhere for the police where, okay, I'm an outlaw, I'm a thug, I'm a drug dealer, I'm doing whatever I'm doing, and I don't want to be around police officers. I've had bad experience. Wouldn't you have a bad experience with the military?
Right.
When they were busy covering your ass in this country?
Right.
Is that when you had a bad time with them?
That's what I understand that. But that he said the whole hetero jock meathead thing, and people want to be safe from that. As if cops and soldiers are going to come in there and beat people up.
What about the lifer that was on Omaha Beach that made it back through?
Right.
What about, is he not allowed to work in the gym? The guy was on Omaha Beach.
Well, here's my question. Number one, how does he know? Do they check? I guess when you sign up, they ask you what you do for a living.
Yeah, the sad thing is, so here's the good thing. That military person that sacrificed and went into service.
Now, he said no active duty military, so he's not saying you can't be a veteran.
Yeah.
But he said no active duty military.
Which, again, begs the question, what's the difference if you were military? You were. Where do you draw that distinction? Well, if you were once in the military and you woke up and realized, hey, what a bullshit gig this is, is that what he's saying?
I don't know.
The only thing I could say is, I'm glad to know where this guy stands. The beautiful thing about America is that we have people that have made sacrifices for this guy to have. Express that. And it's fine with me. I mean, there are plenty of gyms to go to, I'm sure. And the way this place looks, and what he's saying, I just, okay, so what? You don't want me there? I'm not going there.
Here's the thing, too, okay? They said East Atlanta area. I'm going to assume that may be Buckhead, because Buckhead is kind of the yuppie. Silver Lake-ish part of Atlanta. But, you know, for you to turn away any business, and I say this, my company, we have a CrossFit gym in Riverside, California. Way better than your bullshit too, buddy, by the way. I saw your gym. Your shit's raggedy. 2,000 square feet, brand new Rogue Fitness equipment, 5'11 stuff everywhere, and we got flags of every branch of the service, plus the American flag and a POW flag hanging. Because it is a tactical fitness center where public safety personnel are welcome. So nobody's really worried about him because you're going to be able to find places that are very friendly. And not only that, we offer a law enforcement and military discount. So quite the opposite of this horseshit this dude is talking about. But business must be damn good if you're turning away a community of people who believe in fitness as part of their lifestyle for the most part, right? So if you're turning that away, that's a substantial part of your... I would think, except in Buckhead, which is kind of a little more high dollar, so maybe you don't have a lot of law enforcement and military living in Buckhead.
I mean, just listening to him, he sounds as if he's just not the type of person I'd want to be around.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't. So, yeah, damn
so,
him.
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
but this
good for him, I guess.
This is the thing where people say, well, some people don't like cops. It's not just the thugs and the people who've been to jail who don't like cops. And maybe this dude's been to jail, too. Maybe he spent a little too much time in jail. I don't know. But he's just an asshole. Some people are just, I don't like an occupying army, and I don't want to get them stronger so they can hurt people.
Yeah, but
that's just stupid.
Yeah, that's very irrational.
I don't want to get them stronger so they can save people. I don't want them to be able to drag people out of burning buildings.
You educated me because I don't know Atlanta the way you very clearly do, and thank you for enlightening that it's a somewhat ritzy section. I'd be willing to make book that we are looking at a trust fund baby that did this
TFB
as a hobby,
probably, for sure.
That he did this as a hobby, and the business he's turning away doesn't matter to him. It could be a tax write-off, a hobby, some kind of a statement
he wants
to make to be cool.
That happens.
He certainly and the support we agree on this. We defend his right to be an asshole like that.
Sure.
I defend what Kramer did at the Laugh Factory. As long as you're willing to take the consequences of what go along with it, which is Kramer could and would have, should have got his ass beat. And he's now a social pariah. He's unhireable.
His
He'll never be
done,
part any part of a comedy show or any part of a TV show again. That's the price you pay. But I defend his right for the First Amendment. I defend this asshole's right to essentially what he's saying is, since police officers and military are not a race, that he's saying, I'm going on, I reserve the right to refuse service to anyone that any restaurant has when the homeless person walks in.
God bless America.
I guess.
Well, you know what? Hey. But this is the same guy who, when that homeless guy walks in there, is going to call who? He's going to call the police. He ain't calling an Uber. Just send an Uber driver to come get the dude out of there.
Well, he may take the dude next door for coffee. He may just be that type of guy.
Yeah, okay. Maybe he is. Maybe he is. I don't know. But I just, you know, if he had some reason that I could even kind of halfway wrap my head around, when you start talking this shit about, I don't want to make them stronger to hurt people, I don't want that occupying force. That's just ignorant.
I wonder how he feels about having all of that weight equipment in the yard at prison.
Right, because they're getting stronger to hurt people.
Yeah, and they practice tactics to get out of police officer tactics.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, they do those things. We remember seeing the training films. That's
why
they stopped using to put the hands against the wall because they saw guys rehearsing how to get around it. And we are really creating a very dangerous breed of criminal by giving gyms and weight rooms. You know, I've always said that what jail should be for, because they're privatized, I don't want to get into that. But I think if you really wanted to have a jail be anything that was somewhat conducive to changing that person's life around, you should go into jail and you should get sentenced with what your parents should have sentenced you with, and that is you cannot get out of this jail cell until you have a college degree from a minimum 2-year school. You're going to sit there, and so when you come out, now you have some skill other than what you were doing that put you in here.
Yeah, if people want to do that, I mean, everybody don't want to do right. We know that. There's some people who, and I've said this before on the show, there was a famous burglar back in the day in Miami named Murph the Surf. And Murph the Surf was a notorious criminal. He was a second story man. He was a surfer. That's why they called him Murph the Surf. But he hung out on South Beach in Miami. And Murph the Surf once famously said that he was willing to do 70% of his life in custody if that meant he could live the remaining 30% however he wanted. Murph the Surf was incorrigible. He just wanted to live his life, and if that meant I'm locked up 7 out of 10 days of my life, cool. Because the other 3, I'm going to kick it and be me and live my life. And so you got people like that, man, who just don't care.
What was the be me 30% comprised of?
He was a playboy gambler, one of these Ocean 11 cat, but not at that level. But he was hanging out on South Beach, and Miami on South Beach. And he was out there in the water living the life of the cat burglar playboy kind of a thing. Because he was a criminal, so he had money.
He was a burglar.
He was a cat burglar. Yes, well, he did. He was a cat burglar. Yeah, second story man.
Then my choice would be to spend the other 30% in there, too.
Yeah, go ahead and lock
it. If you're a career criminal, just get the fuck off.
That's why we had the 3 strikes law, right, for the habitual criminals. And start locking them up. But this was before we had habitual criminal laws. But yeah, so you got guys like Murph the Surf, man, who just don't live as elegantly as he did.
And then either learn to
live they're violent, too. Murph the Surf was never known to be violent, as far as I know.
Then if 70% is worth it and you don't want to learn the other 30% to do something that honorable people do, then stay with the other 70%.
Yeah. And that's why we have habitual criminal laws.
Earn your way out of jail. Have a career to go to when you get out.
But the reality is you'd likely have to have some elementary school programs and middle school programs
to get them up to that
point.
Fair
enough.
Yeah, because the rate of literacy, you know, I mean, then you're likely violating the Constitution, the amendment associated with cruel and unusual punishment.
Right.
Because
I can't even read, and you expect me to walk out of it with an AA degree?
Yeah, I mean, I've actually been around some folks who are considered illiterate to watch them try to develop, and it makes you literally want to cry to see some 30 or 40 year old guy struggling to read a third or fourth grade book.
Okay. I think he just learned to fight real good and fight Conor McGregor later this month.
Yeah, but see but that's the kind of guy we run into in the field as cops.
Right.
Then what about if that person really was functionally incapable of dealing with classroom material? They have a legitimate skill that they could work
somewhere
upon to where. And then the other side of the coin is, to be fair to that person, that they should be able to hit the streets with a relatively clean record and get a job using that.
Well, the only dynamic.
Well, that's what rehabilitation is supposed to be about.
It's supposed to be, right. But then you run into the dynamic of most of these cats are unemployable or cannot be employed because they have a felony conviction.
That's what he's saying.
What are you giving him a chance to do if his record follows him everywhere, regardless of what he has tried to do to turn his life around?
Yeah, but do you really want to put people out there who have worked themselves to a clean slate, paper-wise, for them to find themselves in a situation where, you know, playing by the rules and working hard like everybody else, and then you're sitting there with like, you know, no record, but you can't do this and you can't do that, and you revert back to crime? Because like you said, some people are just incorrigible.
Some people are incorrigible, and they are, and you know.
And you give them a college degree, and then they become a hell of a white-collar criminal.
Right. Oh, yeah. So before we go to break, I had stopped this female years ago in one of the housing projects in Watts. And she was just one of these little, you know, we used to call them fly girls, right, with the bamboo earrings and all that, attitude, popping gum and shit. And I stopped
fresh
her.
White tennis shoes.
Right, the whole thing, right, with the bag. It might be from the cop that swapped me, but it looks real. So I forget what she was doing, but she had warrants. And so her sister, though, had used her name, okay, on the warrants. The sister, of course, knew her date of birth and her address and everything. We ended up taking her to jail. Monica is her name. I won't say her last name, even if I could remember it. So, all right. So Monica, we book Monica. Monica bails out, whatever. But then like 3 years later, I'm driving through the project again. I see Monica walking on the sidewalk. And I hadn't seen her since then. So we talk. Man, she's missing teeth now and everything else, right? I find out that Monica's been in the joint. That's why I haven't seen her, okay? And she went to prison for credit card fraud, okay? But she gets out and she gets a job working in an airline agency as a ticket booking agent.
Wow.
Which means you're taking people's credit card information over the phone, right? So somebody like that has no business with all that information at their disposal.
Agreed. Well, you see that some of the prisons, and especially in the private sector.
Oh, yeah, they're using phone banks.
People for call centers.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're sitting in a – they're sitting – in prison, taking people's credit card information, or learning computer skills and becoming maybe not necessarily hackers, but using their technical skills to commit white collar crime.
Well, OJ said he learned how to use a computer. He was going to start a blog or something.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I hope not. But listen, let's take our break. We're running a little late here for our break. We're going to take our first break. We're going to come back and jump into another stories. And we're going to continue here on the Ride Along Radio Show. We'll be right back, you know. All right. And that was Like a Stone by Audio Slave. Lead singer is the late, great Chris Cornell, man. One of the greatest voices in rock music. Gone too soon. So anyway, we have a story that just broke, I guess, yesterday, last night. We had a skirmish break out in the housing projects, a fracas in the housing in Nickerson Gardens, which is the largest housing project west of the Mississippi. And I worked there for 14 and a half years. I can tell you ins and outs and outs and ins. And for those of you who are old school rap fans, the video, We're All in the Same Gang, was actually shot in Nickerson Gardens. So if you ever watch that video, was that, yeah, 92, right? If you watch that video, you'll see as they move through Nickerson Gardens with about, like, everybody, the whole West Coast All-Stars that were involved in that. So there was a big fight broke out last night, and this video has the best info I could find on it, and we'll come back and talk about it after it all goes down.
Breaking news.
All right, so I'm here to tell you that this is the first time I've ever seen a situation like that in Nickerson Gardens or any of the housing projects be in the news, because it used to happen all the time. I got to tell you, it was not uncommon for us to take rocks and bottles, for us to have unruly crowds. If you tried to break up the party and they didn't want the party to be over, you know, you couldn't just walk in there with two cops and think you're going to shut it down. You had to come in there, right? And, you know, that sort of thing would just happen. I think the only reason it was noteworthy this time, well, it was noteworthy before anybody even knew that Zach Randolph was involved, the NBA star was involved.
Yeah, it was live on TV last night.
Right, maybe because it was a slow news night, right? But, I mean, it was not uncommon, man. We'd have to go in there, and we called it bats and hats. We take our bats and hats, our helmets and our sticks, and we get in there and do some crowd control. He called it a scrimmage line, like we're playing football.
Yeah, skirmish.
It's a skirmish. Skirmish line is the actual proper term. And let's be clear, a ton. He said Zach Randolph had a ton of weed. A ton is 2,000 pounds. He clearly didn't have 2,000 pounds of weed on him, okay?
Yeah, I heard it was, I heard it was more like 2 pounds of weed in a backpack. And, you know, and like you said, I've responded to help calls, backup calls, assistance calls in the Nickersons a number of times working down on the South End. And it's it can get very hairy, and you have to know where you are because of the way the streets are.
Oh, yeah. The streets curve like crazy in there.
Yeah, and you can't, like you say, you can't go in there with one or two people. And it came, I guess I saw it on the news right at 11 o'clock. It was live. It was listed as an officer needs help.
They put out the help call, man, because they were taking rocks and bottles.
Yeah,
and so I'm surprised there was no gunshots. Sheriffs. Back in the day, there'd be gunshots on top of that.
Yeah.
That, even if only in the air.
Right. Well, when they panned out on the news copter, it looked like it was about 40 police cars lined up. It was LAPD and the sheriffs. It was a lot of troops out there.
Well, that's, you know, that place being... It wasn't, even though it was the biggest project, it wasn't the worst in terms of concentrated nonsense. That probably went
Jordan
to Jordan Downs.
Yeah,
Jordan Downs was probably the one.
East L.A., was it Ramona?
Ramona Gardens, yeah. And both of those places, the Ramona Gardens he's talking about was the birthplace of the Mexican Mafia. The inmate was born in that project. And then Jordan Downs was where the Grape Street Crips came out of. And but right next door to it was Jordan High School, where the Whispers and Flojo Barry White all went to high school there. So.
Yes.
There's some greatness that comes out of that neighborhood, too. Let's be clear. But, you know, there used to be a saying, because there's a street in Nickerson Gardens called Success. Success Avenue. And there used to be a saying, Nickerson Gardens, where defiance is a way of life and success is just the name of a street. Because people, it was raw in there, man. It really was. But there's some good people in there, too. And I remember one time we had a party. It wasn't even a party call. It was just a big party. We're driving by. I think we got out to write tickets in the parking lot next to it or something. And we just asked the people, hey, what's going on over there? Because a lot of times when you see a party like that, especially when it's not a kid's party, they had a bouncer. They had a bouncy bounce house.
Right.
But it was later in the evening. So, okay, well, kids are there. Honestly, my first thought, just being working in that environment for 14 years, was that somebody just got out of the joint.
Or
it's a coming home party, right?
Or there was a funeral.
Well, that maybe, but not with the bouncy house, right? You don't usually see that you know. So I thought, okay, somebody just came out of the joint. He's coming home and he's getting a big welcome back, like he just came back from Iraq or something.
Right.
Because you would see that all the time.
Right.
Okay? You would see that all the time. Oh, homeboy just got out. And I was humbled and I felt ashamed when I found out that the purpose of that party was that the kid who lived in that unit in Nickerson Gardens was leaving the next day to go to West Point. He had graduated and been accepted to West Point, and he was leaving the next day. And so that was a big send-off for his family. You know what I mean?
Right.
So there's decent people
clearly. Some really good people.
The problem is in the housing projects, and most law enforcement, you don't run into the decent people all the time. And the housing projects especially, because there's so many assholes out there, that's who you're dealing with. And when you do see the decent people, it's because they become a victim of one of the assholes, so they're not having a good day when you meet them. So a guy like that, I never even knew that kid existed until he was on his way out.
Right.
You know, so you have to be reminded that there's good people in there too. But my original point is Nickerson Gardens can be off the chain sometimes. And apparently it was last night. Now, my question is, with that much weed, you say 2 pounds. That clearly, if I see somebody with 2 pounds of weed, he's not smoking all that himself.
Well, I mean, let's be real. California, maybe
somebody could help them try.
We've voted and you know,
sure.
Legislatively, it you can have marijuana, you can cultivate.
Well, apparently you can't have 2 pounds of it or a ton.
Well, but the thing is likely if you take the circumstances and look at his socioeconomic status, he just signed a
$24 million contract for 2 years.
Right. So. And a lot of times, as you know, there are a lot of unscrupulous characters in sports.
Hangers on.
Yeah, and I mean, this guy very well could have just been, if it is true that it was in his possession.
Allegedly.
Yeah. If it were in his possession, he could have just been bringing weed to the party.
A party favor. Some people show up with six packs of beer. Some people show up with Doritos.
Well,
show up with 2 pounds of weed in a backpack.
Well, and like they said at TMZ, you know, it's like if Harvey Levin's coming to your house, he's not going to bring Seagram's gin. He's going to bring some, at least Tanqueray.
Nice. At least Tanqueray.
Or higher, right?
Great Goose or something for you, right?
So, you know, I mean, this is likely what could have occurred. The other thing is, as I understand, the other guy that was arrested with him was an ex-con in possession of a weapon.
Well, here's my question. How do you, because Zach Randolph is not from Los Angeles.
Right.
So how do you, being worth now at least $24 million, and this isn't his first year, so he's a millionaire, being worth that kind of money, being highly visible, and they have that much weed, roll into an environment like that where you will get your shit took.
Well, unless
he's already been given safe passage by some shot caller or something.
Well, you know, I mean, he played for the Clippers, so he obviously has some
relationships. Probably some L.A. contacts.
Yeah, some relationships in Los Angeles, and that likely could be it. But again, I'm saying when you consider, I mean, there's so much marijuana out there. 2 pounds.
Two pounds is a lot. I don't care, man. Two pounds is a lot of weed.
I agree with you. But all I'm saying,
I mean, it's only 2 pounds, but I mean, it's a lot in terms of volume, right?
Right. But the point is if you're going to a party in the projects and and let's say this is a group of people where they frequently smoke marijuana, you're going to find people,
allegedly,
right? You're going to find that as you say, a party favor.
It's a party favor, sure.
Right. So, I mean, that likely.
I bring bottles of wine when I come to people's houses for parties and shit, but,
right.
You know,
it'll be,
that's just me.
It would be interesting to see that if he does go to trial on that, you like.
You're not going to do him for sale. They're never going to convince.
Right.
They're never going to convince a jury,
right,
that this millionaire was trying to sling 2 pounds a week.
Yeah, they're
never.
They're just. It would require so much in this day and age.
Not gonna,
now.
He may go for the possession, which is nothing.
Right.
He's going to pay a fine.
Right.
But they're never, ever, ever, ever going to get anybody to believe that he was trying to sell 2 pounds of weed in the project, like he worked at Foot Locker and was trying to come up.
Right.
You know.
I got you.
Never going to happen. But it's just interesting that they went with that. But here's the thing. If you had 2 pounds, if I had 2 pounds, if POTUS, if Roger, any of us had 2 pounds, they would look at it like we're trying to sell it. So you can't book him. Well, we're not going to book him for that because he's rich. So they'll let the DA sort that part out because that's what we consider to be a sellable amount. Even though it wasn't necessarily packaged for sale probably, it's still just a sheer amount of it, right?
Yeah, I guess my biggest question is, you know, when you've just signed a deal like that, and I understand he was brought up to the Kings to help with some of the younger players because of some of his history and the fact that he's played at a couple of teams.
Right. Did he come from the Grizzlies? Was he in Memphis or something?
Yeah,
before?
He was in Memphis.
That's what I thought.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm like, man, if I had signed a $240,000
contract, let alone $24 million, right?
Yeah, you're not going to find me rolling through the Nickersons.
Not at all. For no reason at all. I can't think of one reason that I would be in there.
And if I have family, just from a risk standpoint, but if I have family or something there, you know, that's where you call Uber.
If I have family there, if they're close enough for me to come visit you, it's close enough for me to get you out with my $24 million.
Right. Or
so you're not living there anymore if I'm going to come. If you're close enough for me to want to come visit you in the Nickersons, you're close enough for me to kick you down and get you up out of there.
Yeah. And especially, or at minimum, send a 15-passenger van and have them come over to.
Come get it.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Come hang out with them in Calabasas or whatever.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't know, man. That's that knucklehead shit, and that's part of the problem that these sports teams have and that these leagues have, is these young knuckleheads, right? Getting themselves involved, and we saw Carmelo Anthony do the same thing earlier in his career, just you know, still trying to be in the hood. But here's and I actually saw Allen Iverson last year in North Carolina, walking through the mall, and he just looked like just any other dude,
right?
From you know. The hood walking around in the mall until he got closer and I saw that chain around his neck. And I said, okay, I guess that is Allen Iverson. But I don't know, man. I don't get it. But
well, here, how about the crass white guy throws in something?
Please do, in crass white guy fashion.
Crass white guy fashion that I never say I know what it's like to be black and I'm not from the hood, etc. But I'm very well familiar with the culture, and I think without a doubt. The most difficult accomplishment a human being in the United States can make is to be young and black growing up in that environment with zero to no professional or any kind of parental guidance and to actually rise up above that legally and do so. People do it, and it is beyond a ridiculously strong accomplishment. That is something that is incalculable to even describe because you not only don't have anybody at home guiding you, you're taking ridicule from your peers, you're going to second track schools. You see, everybody that's getting the pussy and driving the nice cars is doing it the wrong way, and you're going to $8 an hour jobs in the summertime. And when you see somebody actually succeed at that, that's the most commendable thing I can think of in this country. So given that culture being what it is, most that do make it out do not make it out that way. They make it out through a jockstrap. And when they do, that's a culture that they want to come back and show everybody, hey, look what I did.
I guess, but that's not even his neighborhood. He didn't even come from there.
But he's
going to be celebrated and recognized there. And maybe in a way that he wouldn't be elsewhere. I understand that.
It would be fair without me knowing this man that he came from a similar place himself.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I don't know that. But I will say you are definitely in the ballpark as correct as a lot of young men and women come out of those communities, and especially in sports or in music or any other arena.
That too.
They find themselves in that situation. It's tough. You don't know how to handle that. You're all of a sudden a mic is thrown in front of you. You have people, you know, signing paperwork for you. You have people representing you that you don't even really know. And then you're expected to just, operate. I get
and
that.
And make good decisions. And you stick that kind of money in the hand of an 18-year-old kid, any race, any color. I mean, when I was 18 years old, I got my student loan and I was an asshole for a couple of weeks. What's going to happen when you take an 18-year-old kid and put hundreds of millions of dollars in his pocket. Now you want him to behave. That's not a very realistic expectation.
No, I would agree with you. Yeah, I don't.
No, absolutely. I just still, you know.
It's just disappointing being black and seeing a young man have that opportunity and then find and then to witness them being in a situation that they shouldn't be in, because if you notice, look at all the publicity that is getting.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So now, what happens to this contract in Sacramento? That 24 is there?
Well, are they going to try to? There's certainly some clauses
morality clause, etc.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Certainly clauses in there.
Yeah. So now what?
And
now
you know,
what? I don't think it'll change much. You don't shoot a pedigree steer for shitting in the front yard. They'll keep him.
but he may have to give him some of that 24 mil.
Yeah, his agent is also his attorney, and so you know the agent was aggressively. In the media today, defending the possession of sales because it doesn't make sense. And the thing is we understand the technical aspects of the law, or at least the elements for the particular offense. But then on the other hand, they're continually repeating what the charge is. And I think that's the thing that's going to likely help him more than anything, is because it's going to be proven like that.
Yeah, he's not getting done on that.
The DA won't even file that.
It's a ludicrous assumption. Without a doubt, there's only one of two possibilities here, and we both all know this as officers. There's only one of two possibilities. Either his friend with the record said, "Y'all hold this for me." Okay,
that's
they
possible.
Won't fuck with you because you're who you are.
Right.
Well, the other side of it is, to me, more likely is you that, hey, fellas, let me throw the party.
Right. That's the party favor. Sure, right.
Let me throw the party. Right. It was
now,
one
now
of
the
those.
The party don't start till I walk in.
Right.
And I probably won't leave until the thing ends.
But if you,
or to LAPD, come hook me up for possession for sale, you right. know.
I don't even think you could get the Simi Valley jury with the Rodney King verdict to say this guy was out there slinging yeah. dub sacks.
No way.
I don't think that's going to happen.
No way. No, he'll be fine on that. But he's going to be in more trouble with the league than he's going to be with the legal system.
Oh, yeah.
Because he can pay his way out of this, and it's not going to be a big deal.
But how much trouble are you really going to be in with the league? This is – of all the things that happen in professional sports today, this is probably among the least egregious.
Well, yeah, because he's not knocking nobody out or killing anybody drunk driving.
I didn't beat up his wife in an elevator.
And he ain't kneeling during the national anthem or nothing horrific or like that, nothing heinous, you know.
Well, the other thing is – Well, the other thing is he may have a clean dope test.
I mean, so let's talk about that.
Because that's going to be another issue.
Right. And then that's like, it wasn't even for me.
Right.
I don't use drugs. Here's my last piss test, and it was clean.
Right.
Here's the next one. And, you're right. Absolutely.
Or him and the guy are standing there together, and they do constructive possession.
Right.
And because the other guy is.
So I already got you. So here's a third possibility. There's a gun and there's a dope. There's dope, right? I already, like you said, constructive possession. I got the gun on you already.
On the guy.
On the guy. Right. So you good. You bought and paid for. Let me put this dope on you. So now I got two arrests now, and I can get two people up out of here. That could happen too.
Yeah, and I'm
not saying that's what they did.
Right.
But that could happen too.
But constructive possession is very easy to charge. And like you're saying, one guy with the gun, the other guy's got the dope. But apparently or allegedly, they saw him running away with the backpack.
Wouldn't they have him on dominion and control?
Well, if it's in the car or something like that, under his control, and if it's on a backpack, here's the other thing. I guess he's not a track star, though. I'm saying, how the fuck you get caught? You're a professional athlete. How you run? How you let somebody catch you in police uniform with boots on and stuff?
Maybe it was Metro.
Yeah, it might have been Metro. Some of them boys out there are in tip-top shape.
That's right.
But, there was a guy, and I told this story before, Houston McTeer used to be the fastest man in the world. I don't know if you remember that.
I remember that name.
Okay, yeah. Houston McTeer was around. He would have been a big deal at the 80 Olympics had we gone. Okay, he was in that era. Carl Lewis, Houston McTeer, but he was a little before Carl Lewis. Last time I saw Houston McTeer, he had developed a substance abuse problem, and he was down and out in Santa Monica. Okay?
That's a shame.
It was a damn shame and a hell of a waste of talent.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that Houston McTeer could probably still outrun anybody on Santa Monica PD if he had to, so it didn't matter. You know what I mean? So you still got those types out there, you know? So look, we're going to go to a break, and we're going to be right back right after this song, and we're going to jump into another video that generated a whole bunch of talk on social media, and we'll get to the bottom of it. See you in a minute. All right, and that was... That was Points of Authority / 99 Problems by Linkin Park and Jay-Z. So we're back here on the Right Along Radio Show. And there was a video that came out last week. Actually, I think it's a little older than that. But that video actually lays out an incident that happened at a McDonald's somewhere, I think, down south. And, man, I thought, well, there's some critique to how it was handled. But by and large, I found it amusing, and I watch it many, many times, especially for that casket pose. You'll see what I'm talking about when we play it.
Please tase him. I want to tase shit out of him.
Everybody's look at him. They're all knowing him. You don't know about anyone else.
It's for her protection.
Turn around, put your hands on your back. I'm not gonna let up. Turn around and put your hands behind your back. You do not hit a cop ever.
Hit a fucking woman. You don't hit a fucking woman.
Turn around and put your hands behind your back, I said. Turn around and put your hands behind your back!
No. Ooh.
Turn around and put your hands behind your back right now. Do as I say right now. Turn around. Put your hands behind your back right now.
Okay.
Turn around. Stay like that. Okay. Do not move until someone else comes here. Do you understand me? Do you understand what I'm saying? You never place your hands on anyone. Do you understand me?
Yeah, I know.
What? You stay like that until someone gets here. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Here we go.
All right, gotta love that casket pose. Oh, wow. Now, that's the casket challenge.
What was the original reason for the stop? What was she?
You know what? I got the impression he's probably drunk and disorderly in the McDonald's or something, and she was called there and encountered him in the doorway. That's the impression I got. I don't know the backstory on it. Just the impression I got, because apparently the guy was filming already, so he must have been sick of the dude, or you know, watching him. The guy must have drawn attention to himself or something. So. I don't know, but I'm just surmising that.
Could I just say one thing before we go any further with this topic? It's a little bit unrelated. This is a perfect example of why all of the inflammatory videos you see from body cams and dash cams on police officers, you can't really draw all the conclusions to
right.
get a really accurate picture. Is I want to know what the fuck caused her to be there in the first place, because we came in when she had him at taser point.
Right. Well, she came in and talked. Yeah, she already had her taser on him. When we first, when the video opened, right?
So something happened before that for her to get to that point.
Well, that's true.
And that's what I'd like to know what that is before you draw judgments, when it goes the other way and something where he ends up shot.
Why? Well, see, okay, and exactly. So in this situation, fortunately, it didn't go there. But had he ended up shot, we would want to know.
What
exactly
happened before?
Yeah.
Why was she there? What was the PC to be?
Now, I haven't seen anyone be critical of the initial actions that she took. And I don't have any problem with the initial action that she took. I think that maybe she was not aggressive enough initially. And the reason I say that is she let that man hit her in the face.
Why did she holster her weapon to begin with?
Why did she holster it? And why are you looking down?
She invited that.
She invited that shot.
Times. Yeah, she did.
She showed weakness. And then when he's knuckling up, he like pauses, like, put him up then. And she's like thinking he's not going to hit her, I guess. And then he hit her. And that freak, you remember Sanford's son, Woodrow, Aunt Esther's husband?
Right.
He reminded me of Woodrow. Just an old frail-ass drunk. And I think she really could have jumped on that dude and thumped him, because she's just had more body mass and she's in better health. I think she could have just pummeled that dude with her bare hands if she'd chosen to do so. But instead, she gets hit in the face, and now the taser comes back out, which is perfectly justified at that point, for sure. I don't know that I would have gone that route, but it's fine if she wanted to go that route. She could have hit him back, or she could have tased him, whatever. She chose to tase him. Initially, you know, she hits him with that first jolt, man. He rides the lightning. He goes down, but he's still not compliant, okay? And you hear he's cursing the whole way down, you know, because that hurts. I'm going to tell you, I went to taser instructor school, and they made us, they gave us a dose of the Edison medicine in instructor school, and it doesn't feel good at all. It's an indescribable feeling. But he got hit pretty good. He goes down, he's rolling around on the ground, and he's still not being compliant, so she re-energizes. Every time you pull the trigger on a taser, there's a five-second cycle, okay? We call it the five-second ride. That we talk about riding the lightning, and that ride is 5 seconds long. And we're taught, even though you can turn it off and make it shorter, we're taught every time you let it ride all 5 seconds. And the reason you do that is people won't ever say that, well, this department only tases people 3 seconds. Or when you dealt with this suspect, you tase him all 5 seconds. But when you dealt with this suspect, you only tase him 4 seconds. We don't do that. It's a standard 5-second ride. Everybody gets it. So when that's over, then you give commands, put your hands behind your back, roll over. Right. She did that the first couple of times. And then after that, she just started just juicing him again. You know, and then eventually he said, okay, I got that.
Finally had enough. Yeah, I'm like you guys. I don't know the front story. I don't know why she was there, what the purpose was. Certainly there are a few things she could have done differently, but I don't fault her for any of it. I would like to know why she reholstered.
Right. That invited that.
Yeah, and that's my only question. But what I will say is this is a perfect example of women in law enforcement find themselves in situations where they don't I want to say this to where it makes sense. They're usually involved in less force incidents because of their ability to talk people down and things like
that. So maybe she had too much trust in that?
Well, no, I'm saying the thing is she showed a hell of a lot of restraint. And I think that is one of the benefits to having women in law enforcement.
Well, however, she's a cop first. Because somebody else said, even the guy in the video said, you don't hit a woman. She said, you don't ever hit a cop. He goes, you don't hit a woman. That's out the window. Well, she's a cop first.
I'm just saying from the benefit of research and knowledge.
Sure,
and
in terms of cops using it, we have
diversity in law enforcement.
And that's one of the things that women typically bring. Exactly. And not all of them, but some do.
Right, clearly. And in this instance, she certainly showed a lot of restraint.
She did. Because I would have hit him in his mouth.
Punch. Yeah, she took a punch, and then she didn't use excessive force, and she gave a lot of clear commands. And thankfully that other person was recording that.
We have a caller on the line. Caller, what's your name and where are you calling from?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Well, it's Willie Sweet, Wonka Joe.
Yeah. What's going on, George?
Looks like you
would be Officer Murtaugh right there, and you got Officer Riggs to the left of you.
The lethal weapon.
We're going that route.
Murtaugh. Okay. Right. And we got the Beverly Hills Cop banana and tailpipe over here tomorrow.
Right? Oh, I thought you were right.
Dano or somebody.
Right. Dano from Hawaii 50 with his shirt, right? Hey, man. I'm glad you called because I have an Atlanta question. Where is Village or East Village or whatever? Is that in Buckhead?
East Village?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. That sounds like Rainbow City over there.
Well, it's funny you would say that. And so when you
sound like a bunch of guys with booty shorts and skates over there. I don't know what that's at.
Okay. Well, when you watch a replay later, you'll see why I'm asking you that question. So what's happening, man? What's going on with you?
Well, you know, George, first of all, if I was that young lady, I would have shot little buddy in both his kneecaps. I ain't got time to be talking about, get on the ground. After I say that one time, you getting bullets to the knees, man. You know what I mean? Because you tripping, man.
She showed restraint, though, right?
Now, George, you already know I am with law enforcement. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I never sit here and say all police this and all police that. I only talk about the situations that, you know what I'm saying, we talk about.
Okay.
But in that situation right there, man, that lady, man, she talking like a substitute teacher in math class to him. You know what I'm saying? She should have dropped him both his kneecaps, got some hot grease from the back of the kitchen, threw it in his face, and kicked him in his balls. You know what I mean?
Okay. Well, not if she wanted to remain a police officer. But,
well, you know, what the hell with all that, George? You going to hit me in my face?
That was disrespectful, right? But that taser, I'm telling you, man, that taser hit you, and you think somebody got some hot grease on you somewhere, for real.
Oh, but, George,
did
buddy.
Did you see that pose, though? Did you see that casket pose he threw on?
I thought he was getting turned on by the damn electricity.
He must have been. As much as he was fighting back and being non-cooperative, you're probably right.
He looked like he was feeling it, like give me some more. Oh, yeah.
Well, eventually he had enough because he rolled over and put his hands behind his back. I'm surprised he didn't light a cigarette.
Yeah, man. Hey, George, let me tell you something, too.
Uh-huh.
2 pounds of marijuana, man. That ain't nothing, man.
Well, now, see, I'm glad you called in to talk about that. I'm glad you called to weigh in, as it were. So 2 pounds of marijuana would last an average marijuana smoker how long if they were to consume that by themselves.
Oh, well, you're talking about by yourself or with your homies?
Okay, well, you and one person.
Oh, well, man, 2 pounds? Woo! Probably about, I say a good month.
Okay, so if you divided that by 50 people at a party, though, that's enough for one night then.
Oh, hell yes. I don't know how many people was at the party in Nickerson Gardens, you know what I'm saying?
But that's the largest.
I was telling Poe, I was like, damn, Poe, they didn't invite your ass over there. Shit. 2 pounds? What? And it's from an NBA player?
Right, it's probably good, right? Probably good stuff, as they say, yeah. From NBA level. Well,
I would have been like, look, George, we going to party over here. If I was with Zach Randolph, I'd be like, look, Zach, we going to hit this little party over here, niggas in gardens, you know what I'm saying? Smoke a little bit. Then we going to head over there to Beverly Hills with the rich white folks, and we going to store some real cocaine up there, because they got good cocaine.
He said cocaine. That's old Southern time.
No, they don't.
They don't.
No, they don't.
I would assume if you got 2 pounds in the projects, you could go up to the hills and they got 2 kilos up there.
First off, dude, I gotta say something. If you know people that could go through 2 pounds, two guys in 1 month, you know some heads.
Yeah, no, shut up.
Bro, well, you know, people, man, like nowadays, bro. We talking about back then when I was a pure smoker, I was doing about 2, 3, 4 blunts in a day. You know what I'm
How
saying?
How much money is that, man? How much does that work out to money wise in a day?
Well, I was breaking even.
Let me see.
The statutes of limitations. Okay. Yeah, I was breaking even.
Okay.
So, but you know, if I was a customer back then, shit, man, that was probably about $75
a day.
You know what I mean?
Willie, this is something I find.
I wasn't smoking no mid. Go ahead.
This is what I find interesting. I mean, you find old school weed smokers smoke a one paper zigzag joint, and and just, I mean, it seems like with blunts you're wasting weed. I mean, you get the same of you get a euphoria, your body responds negatively to it, you get a headache, you know, you smoking all that weed, you're wasting weed. Old school smokers, you talk to old school smokers and they get one zigzag and roll a joint with it, and you talk to them.
Oh, and no tobacco involved, you say.
No tobacco. And then not only that, I don't understand why people are using wraps and blunts. All that is recycled toilet paper. That's not
what?
Yeah. You don't.
What's wrong with that?
Never mind.
Okay. Look, hey, Willie Sweet.
Protecting the environment.
Willie Sweet, I appreciate your efforts as a conservationist.
Hey, George.
Yes, sir.
Hey, man, tomorrow night, man, you coming through, man, at about 9 o'clock. Well, you know, they probably ain't going to show up till 9:47. You know how Lou Dixon them do. But
oh,
you coming through tomorrow?
No, I'm going to be there on Saturday, though, at the Robin Harris tribute. I actually met Robin Harris Jr. the other day at, of all places, a family reunion. Long story. We won't have time to get into it now. But I'll see them on Saturday night. I won't be here tomorrow.
Are we talking about the Regency?
Yes, the Regency West.
George, hold up. Did you ever meet Robin Harris?
No, I didn't. I saw him one time at the comedy club on the sidewalk on Comedy Store. I never met him.
What's going on tomorrow?
Lou Dix is doing his show here.
Louis Dix is doing this show.
He's doing a show.
Yeah, Lou Dix is doing his show.
Him and
CDP, and that bald-headed dude, man.
Jeff Arnold, a.k.a. John Lemon.
Said it. I didn't want to acknowledge him. I didn't want him to get a bigger head than he already got.
Well, that's pretty big.
And you're saying the Robin Harris joints on Saturday?
It's at the Regency West, yep.
Oh, damn, I'm going to go to that.
Okay, then I'll call you up.
All right, look, George, but y'all talking too much.
Well,
look, George, shout out to you, man. Shout out to that Mexican dude you be with, Gilberto, you know what I'm saying? Shout out to Officer Riggs, and shout out to the guy who looked like E-40 if E-40 was a librarian or some shit. I'll holler at y'all.
That's a compliment.
That's pretty good. Skiggity skack.
Oh, that's my boy from the Bay.
So look, Roger,
dig.
You have been busy since the last time I saw you. And that was Willie Sweet Wonka Joe, by the way, Ride Along Radio Show legend.
He is a legend. I can see why.
He's hilarious.
He's got some moves.
Yeah, hilarious, man. So, man, tell us about the project you're working on. You got going and stuff, man.
I'm working. This is coming up on our fourth show at the Comedy Palace. It's the Blue Lives Matter comedy tour.
Now, where's the Comedy Palace?
The Comedy Palace is in San Diego.
Okay.
And I'm doing something that is very unusual for me. I've been a comic 27 years. And since I started this tour, I have produced four shows. And prior to that, I had never even produced an omelet. And I've gotten to actually where I have some confidence in it, not because I'm getting better at it, but because the show is really something worth seeing. It's eight of us that are professional comics that are current or former police officers, and I have the beasts of this game. I've got it's a nice little demographic spread. I got three white guys, one Puerto Rican, and four blacks.
So you spread it out.
Equal NYPD, I got a Michigan State Trooper, I got a Baltimore police officer.
And there's a graphic up there. And I see David Rabine, who's been on the Ride Along Radio Show before, former Houston PD cop with some great undercover stories.
Fantastic stories. And we just, David Rabine, myself, and Dwayne Gill just played Tommy's. It went over very well. And we're going to be the three also. They're going to be at the Comedy Palace. And we just found out, you guys are going to appreciate this, and I'll have you translate for it. But I wanted a couple of local San Diego police officers to come down and open the show for us. And after a number of calls, they finally told me there were no such officers. However, the sheriffs down there had two officers that are doing comedy.
Oh, really?
And they called themselves Officer Hook'em and Officer Book'em.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Hook'em and Book'em. Gotcha.
And book'em.
Gotcha.
So,
that's funny.
We're hoping to get them on.
It's funny you would say that because one of the funniest guys I ever worked with, shout out to Artie Giuliano, Art came from San Diego Sheriff's Department. So maybe that's just a culture of funny guys down there.
I'm hoping so. And we are very much looking to the show. And we're working a portion of every show goes to the families of fallen officers, a different one. We're going to be at the CHP 1199 Foundation this time.
Nice.
So it's a good show. And what I always look at it is that anybody that walks out of there saw three headliner-level comics. That's at least what we're guaranteeing.
Outstanding, man. So how can people find out information about when the show's going to be in their town? Or how can they get tickets, et cetera?
Go to the website, Blue Life. Very, thank you very much. Look at this.
There it is. There's the graphic.
Blue Lives Matter Comedy Tour.com. And you can go straight down to the bottom at Eventbrite and hook up tickets. And they're $10 online, $20 at the door. It's all for a good cause and all for a really good time. And I'd love to see you there.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. When are you guys going to be in San Diego?
The 23rd of August. That's okay. A week from Wednesday.
Outstanding. That sounds good, man. That sounds good. I love San Diego anyway, so that's an excuse for me to get down there and you know, be in my old stomping grounds down there and hang out with you guys. So
we'd love
very
to have
good,
you.
Man.
It would be an honor.
Yeah, the gas lamp, for sure. Yeah, nothing like the gas lamp.
Little Italy.
Yeah, that too. But the gas lamp is
eat and drink.
Yeah, nice little spot. So man, you know, when I look at your background, a guy who is an athlete, a student athlete, guy who went to Stanford University, right? I mean, man, that's a pretty heavy chops right there, right? And then you go into law enforcement, and now you're a comic, man. You're wearing a lot of hats, man. You're probably the most varied and interesting guy that I know, honestly. And I know a lot of people.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, man, I don't want to call it twists and turns, just a lot of wide and varied experience, man. You got to have great stories with all that life experience, and you got to have picked up a lot of knowledge along the way. And I imagine that it helps your comedy.
It does to some degree, but I think more than anything else, that comedy is something that all of us that have eyes and ears can do if we have enough of a, particularly those of us that were in this game that we're in. Officers have a very twisted sense of humor.
Oh, my God.
As you know.
Yeah. Like,
and
oh,
it's
yeah.
A very, very dark show.
We laugh at stuff that people don't want to laugh at. We readily laugh at.
Right. And for the reason that that's how you keep your sanity. If you want the sickest sense of humor, talk to emergency room physicians, talk to paramedics, talk to firemen, talk to police officers.
Yep.
Comedy is tragedy turned inside out. And that's the only way we survive it is by finding a way to have dark humor get us through it.
Oh, yeah. There's. Yeah, man, no doubt.
Nobody ever calls a police officer having a good day. It's not for a birthday party. You see the ass end of life, and it's something that you either – and that's why, again, I'll reiterate, I take my hat off to you gentlemen who have done it a whole lot longer than I did. I checked out after 3 years.
Well, you know what, man? You see so much stuff. I mean, you know, after a while, man, you stand it long enough, you're going to know what death looks like. You're going to know what it smells like. You're going to know what burning human flesh smells like. You're going to know what bullets being shot at you sound like. You're going to know what it feels like to shoot another human being. I mean, there's all that stuff that you think soldiers only get exposed to, right? And they're starting to figure out now that cops and firemen have the kind of exposure that leads to PTSD, you know? And I think they're finally starting to get a handle on that and look at it differently than they did before, you know?
And they're living with it.
Yeah,
that's I don't know to say if that's more dangerous than it is commendable. But
well, you know what? That's why the suicide rate's so high too. I'm sure, and it's undiagnosed in many cases. But you know, this profession has a super high suicide rate compared to other professions. You know, and they say, well, it's because of the proximity to guns. You've always got a gun there, but it's not just that. It's some of the issues that come along with being exposed to constant trauma. And the way out of that, man, or at least to something that acts as kind of a salve for that, is comedy.
Right.
You know, I mean, some of this, if any of us were to sit down and write a book, it would have to be fiction because people would not believe it could be real and could fall into the nonfiction category. I mean, just some of the things that you see. But some of the stuff you find humor in, you know, and some of the stuff that some of the people you work with who were just hilarious. And I wonder sometime, so you made the point about you having to develop a sense of humor to survive in this job. And so it's that, and then it also makes me wonder, is it that, you know, maybe that draws, the line of work draws people who get dark humor maybe a little bit more. I don't know which one it is, but there's stuff, man, we sit up and talk about and laugh about and tell stories about that when you're around civilians, you know, they're kind of like turning green. We're laughing our asses off. And
that would at best be an infinite regression to which one came first. But, you know, one of the things that stands out in my mind recently is when we were in Connecticut, one of the officers that we had open the show was a 27-year New York homicide cop.
Oh, he's seen everything.
He's seen everything. And one of his bits, and he was about a 5-7-year comic, and he was doing very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
But he did a bit that I can't do any justice to, but it was hilarious the way he laid it out. But it began by saying, I was on the job on 9/11, and one of the things we had to do after 9/11 was the big barges of the wreckage of the building, we were taking it to a landfill. And we started to develop a problem because we would dump the pieces of the building in the landfill, and there were body parts in it, and the seagulls were eating the body parts, and we were developing seagull problems, and then all of these issues came along. What do? We shoot the seagulls? And on it goes.
Right.
And I'm thinking, where the fuck is he going with this?
Right. How could this be in the joke?
How is this going to be funny? And then it turned out that he turns it into a few minutes. And I was also on duty when Captain Sully landed the jet successfully in the Hudson River,
right.
And I was on duty that day, and I walk up to him, and I said, Captain Sully, you don't know me, but I'm very happy to be. He said, well, I know you. You're the guy that got rid of the seagulls. Where the fuck were you an hour ago? And it was very
funny. That's good. That's
how cops make misery funny. What was funny about 9/11 and body parts and seagulls, but he found a way to
Turn it around. Yeah, and you got to do that, man. It's just, you know, again, doing work in Hollywood, I deal with people who are more like that gym owner we saw earlier, right? And I remember sitting at, we're on location and it's lunchtime and we're sitting there eating, and I have the star of the show who I'm working with on some tactical stuff. We're sitting down eating lunch and we're talking, and somehow I get into this story about a guy who committed suicide, okay? And the brain matter and all this. And I see the guy, he's sitting across from me. I won't say his name. I haven't seen him in a while, but he's still acting. And he stops and he goes, oh, dude, I kind of lost my appetite. And he's got on SWAT uniform because of the scene we're working, right? And I'm like, damn, that's right. I'm not sitting around really talking to SWAT dudes here. This dude just plays one on TV. Right. You know what I mean? Right. You don't want to hear stories about brains and shit that we think is funny. Yeah. Bunch of SWAT dudes, we'd be sitting around laughing about this stuff. Any cops would be sitting around laughing about the story. But, man, it was just it went over like a turd in a punch bowl, man. You know, it just, you know, it's all about time and place. Everybody doesn't get our sense of humor.
Or like 9/10, you're riding around with your boy and he yells, hey, look, he's writing a summons.
Oh, right. A summons.
Right.
A summons, right. Exactly.
We're in L.A. and a guy from New York sees me writing a ticket.
Right.
He called it a summons.
Yeah. He called it a summons, right. And he goes, there's JB right there. He's writing. You saw JB writing that summons?
Right.
Like a summons.
Summons needs to go to court.
Well, you have to know the guy to know.
Right.
He's like hardcore New York. And it was funny because he repeats it like 3 or 4 times. And it's just like so funny because that's their lingo, like a perp.
Right, perp, you know, summons, right.
Yeah, you hear somebody say perp, you know they either got it from TV or they're from the East Coast.
They're from East Coast, one of the two, exactly.
You know, and it's funny how we laugh at each other's...
their colloquialisms and everything,
yeah,
sure.
Exactly.
I've never heard skell on the West Coast.
Skell, how about a bus?
A bus.
When they're calling for an ambulance, they call it a bus.
A bus, exactly.
What the hell is that?
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, it was just the little differences. But, You know,
or like how we used to watch cops and talk about their tactics.
Oh yeah, especially boys down south that go to 2-week police academies and all that.
I think the only one that crossed over bicoastally is Hinky. Where the fuck did Hinky?
Oh, I like Hinky.
Yeah, Hinky. Yeah.
I like Hinky. Yeah,
I
don't know, man. You acting real Hinky right now, man. I don't know.
I remember being on probation and a dude actually tried to convince me to write that in a report.
Hinky. Yeah, right. That ain't gonna fly.
Well, it didn't fly because he couldn't spell it.
Because nobody's ever spelled it.
Exactly.
It's just something you say. Nobody knows how to spell Hinky.
Okay, I like to do this on every show because I'm working on a bit because I actually have to tell some cop stories now, which I have never done in 27 years of comedy, and I'm working on a few. But
right.
I always say the same thing, and I like to do this. We never met before today, correct?
Right.
Okay, watch this. As police officers, every time we ever pulled over a driver who we suspected was drinking and said, "Have you been drinking tonight?" he said, quote,
"No.
I've had..."
Oh, you mean I've had two
a
beers?
A couple of beers.
Yeah,
I've had
beers.
a couple of beers.
I always got two beers.
I only had two beers. I had a couple of beers.
Yeah, but okay. He throws up four fingers.
Right, I had two beers.
I had two beers.
I actually had a guy in the backseat. It's like, I can't believe you're taking me to jail. I've driven way drunker than this.
Oh, yeah. You should have called me last week.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You hit me Saturday.
The incredible, man. Well, some of the stuff we see, man. Well, listen, I'm definitely going to come down and check you guys out, man. And you know, I'd love to follow what you guys are doing. And you put your Instagram up, and hopefully people will click on that and check it out. I want to thank you for coming in, man. Really appreciate you coming here.
I appreciate you having me, and it was very nice working with you as well.
Pleasure.
Man. I love being a part of this show.
JB coming in batting cleanup for us. I appreciate it, man, making it all work.
You called it backup.
There we go. I called for a backup, and they showed up. So, listen.
You backup, you got Don Ho.
There you go. Tiny little
I had to get one
and
in.
A George Carlin lookalike.
Wow.
See, here it comes. At the end of the show, we start getting the shots in.
George Carlin.
You wouldn't blame me for that. I would want to be
he's
him.
A hell of a guy.
He was the best.
So you can follow us at Ride Along Radio Show on Instagram. You can follow our Facebook page. Again, if you have something to say about what you heard here today or what you saw here today, leave it down here in the YouTube comment section. And we will respond to it next week when we come back. This has been show number 87, by the way, and we're looking towards show 100 here in a couple of months, and we're going to try to get a kind of a studio audience kind of a setup where we can work that out in here and kind of have some people come through. So until then, I'm George Holt.
JB.
Roger Rod. Thanks for having me.
And this has been Ride Along Radio Show. We'll catch you guys next week here on the Morris Media Network.